More generally, high valuation on land has translated into Australians embracing rural agricultural values justified by their British background, but not justified by Australia's low agricultural productivity. Those rural values continue to pose an obstacle to solving one of modern Australia's built-in political problems. The Australian Constitution gives a disproportionate vote to rural areas. This strong rural vote ignores the already mentioned reality that Australia is the most highly urbanized nation. They have contributed to the government's long-continued perverse support for measures mining rather than sustaining the environment, such as land clearance and indirect subsidies of uneconomic rural areas. Until 50 years ago, emigration to Australia was overwhelmingly from Britain and Ireland. Those emotional ties to Britain continue today. Britain still appoints a Governor-General for Australia with the power to fire the Australian Prime Minister, and he actually did so in 1975. Until the early 1970s, Australia maintained a White Australia policy and virtually banned immigration from its Asian neighbors, a policy that understandably angered them. Only within the last 25 years has Australia belatedly become engaged with its Asian neighbors, accepted Asian immigrants, and cultivated Asian trade partners. Until 1950, agricultural products, especially wool, were Australia's main exports, followed by minerals. Today, Australia is still the world's largest wool producer, but Australian production and overseas demand are both decreasing because of increasing competition from synthetic fibers. Australia's number of sheep peaked in 1970 at 180 million and has been declining steadily ever since. Almost all of Australia's wool production is exported, especially to China and Hong Kong. Other important agricultural exports include wheat, specialty durum wheat, wine, and chemical-free beef. At present, Australia produces more food than it consumes and is a net food exporter. But Australia's domestic food consumption is increasing as its population grows. If that trend continues, Australia could become a net importer rather than exporter of food. Wool and other agricultural products now rank only in third place among Australia's earners of foreign exchange, behind tourism, number two, and minerals, number one. Australia is the world's leading exporter of coal. It has the world's largest reserves of uranium, lead, silver, zinc, titanium, and tantalum, and is among the world's top six countries in its reserves of coal, iron, aluminum, copper, nickel, and diamonds. Especially its reserves of coal and iron are huge and not expected to run out in the foreseeable future. While Australia's largest export customers for its minerals used to be Britain and other European countries, Asian countries now import nearly five times more minerals from Australia than do European countries. Japan buys nearly half of Australia's exported coal, iron, and aluminum. In short, over the last half century, Australia's exports have shifted from predominantly agricultural products to minerals, while its trade partners have shifted from Europe to Asia. The U.S. remains Australia's largest source of imports and, after Japan, its second largest export customer. Those shifts in trade patterns have been accompanied by shifts in immigration. With an area similar to that of the U.S., Australia has a much smaller population, currently about 20 million, for the obvious good reason that the Australian environment is far less productive and can support far fewer people. Nevertheless, in the 1950s, many Australians, including government leaders, looked fearfully at Australia's much more populous Asian neighbors, especially Indonesia, with its 200 million people. Many Australians concluded that their country suffered from a dangerous problem of being greatly underpopulated compared to those Asian neighbors, and that it would become a tempting target for Indonesian expansion unless it quickly filled all that empty space. Hence, the 1950s and 1960s brought a crash program to attract immigrants as a matter of public policy. That program involved abandoning the country's former white Australia policy, under which immigration was not only virtually restricted to people of European origin, but even predominantly to people from Britain and Ireland. The perceived population shortage led the government first to accept and then actively to recruit immigrants from other European countries. Not until the 1970s did the desire to attract more immigrants, combined with growing recognition of Australia's Pacific rather than just British identity, induce the government to remove legal obstacles to Asian immigration. While Britain, Ireland, and New Zealand are still Australia's major sources of immigrants, one quarter of all immigrants now come from Asian countries. Immigration reached its all-time peak in the late 1980s, with the result that nearly one quarter of all Australians today are immigrants born overseas. The fallacy behind this policy of filling up Australia is that there are compelling environmental reasons why, even after more than two centuries of European settlement, Australia has not filled itself up to the population density of the U.S. Given Australia's limited supplies of water and limited potential for food production, it lacks the capacity to support a significantly larger population. Nevertheless, many influential Australians, including the recent Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser, the leaders of both major political parties and the Australian Business Council, still argue that Australia should try to increase its population to 50 million people. The reasoning invokes a combination of continued fear of the yellow peril from overpopulated Asian countries, the aspiration for Australia to become a major world power, and the belief that that goal could not be achieved if Australia had only 20 million people. But Australians today no longer expect to become a major world power. Even if they did have that expectation, Israel, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, and Singapore provide examples of countries with populations far less than that of Australia that nevertheless are major economic powers and make big contributions to world technological innovation and culture. Contrary to their government and business leaders, 70% of Australians say that they want less rather than more immigration. In the long run, it is doubtful that Australia can even support its present population. The best estimate of a population sustainable at the present standard of living is 8 million people, less than half of the present population.